Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
Hey everybody, I am Andy Harris, and with me is my co-host, Matt Kritzberg. Hey Matt, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. What about yourself?
Doing pretty good. Wiscar Yanoa is doing pretty good, except for that Giancarlo Stanton guy.
Yeah, unfortunately, got to face nine hitters, and one of them sometimes will get you good.
We're going to talk about the minor league stuff here. We're going to go kind of quick because this is a really good game, and we kind of want to get back to it. So, Matt, I want to get your thoughts on a few things here before we go through the affiliates. Travis d'Arnaud, 2-year extension with the Braves. And, of course, the first thing that people want to know is, what does this mean for William Contreras and Shea Langeliers? So I guess my question to you is, Matt, what does this mean for William Contreras and Shea Langeliers?
It doesn't really have to mean anything for either one of them. I mean, you got a lot of depth at catcher now, and they're paying a very low salary, really, for Travis d'Arnaud for the next couple of seasons, $8 million per season. I mean, he could put up one more per season and be worth the contract. So it's not such a huge amount that it's going to hamstring them either way, but it gives them time to develop Contreras at Langeliers at their pace. I mean, who knows what could possibly happen there. I mean, I've already seen a couple of the beat writers opine that they'll get a veteran catcher to go along with d'Arnaud next season, but that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And I've already seen some other folks as well put out there that, hey, William Contreras could also play some other positions as well. But, I mean, we'll see how that goes. But with the DH also coming in next season, that opens up even more options that you can have basically two full-time catchers, so to speak, and play them roughly 80, or let's say a split of, say, d'Arnaud 100 games and Contreras for 60-ish games, and whoever's not catching that particular day can be DH. So, I mean, it opens up a lot of possibilities. And I don't think they're going to be looking to trade anybody. In fact, for the real reason of, based on what the way the team looks and what going into next year, I'm not sure there's going to be any big holes to fill that you'll have to pull off some kind of blockbuster trade to do something like that. So why not just hang on to all these catchers and just enjoy the wealth?
Yeah, you think after this season, people would realize you cannot have enough depth at catcher. It's impossible to have too much depth at catcher. I suspect that it's going to be d'Arnaud and Contreras next year. They sign a veteran, that's fine. It could be a veteran for AAA, or it could be a veteran for Major Leagues. It could be Steven Vogt back, which would be fine too. If the worst thing that's happened is that William Contreras and Shea Langeliers have to split time at AAA, that's not a bad thing either.
No, and you can use the plan they used a few weeks ago as the template for that, where William Contreras and Alex Jackson were essentially just splitting up time. They were, one would catch one day and the other would DH, and they'd reverse the next day.
We,
I mean, that's a pretty good
plan.
We also
know that the days of a so-called starting catcher catching, you know, 75-85% of the starts, that's pretty much gone away with a few exceptions. And that's especially true in the South. I mean, it's not getting any cooler in the summer in the South, and it won't in our lifetimes. So you have to have a catcher that can play more than just 25%, that to just be the caddy for, you know, the top pitcher on your team, like the old days when Javi Lopez caught 5 out of 7 days.
Yeah, I would think at max these days, you're talking about a 65-35 split, really. One catcher catches two games of the series, the other one catches one. And I think there's still going to be enough playing time based off of that to justify bringing Contreras up next year and Langeliers catching a majority of the games at AAA.
Well, we're moving on up, moving on up to the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky. Moving on up.
All right, we had a whole bunch of guys moving on up this week, Matt. And it starts with Bryce Elder, who moved on up from Mississippi after starting the season at Rome. He was extremely successful in Mississippi and had a pretty good first start at Gwinnett.
Yeah, he went 5 innings, gave up 2 runs. I mean, it was a good start for his first initial start and foray into AAA. Gave up 3 hits over 5 innings, struck out 6. So yeah, you can't expect much more than that out of the first start, especially in comparison to the guy he replaced as Nolan Kingham was moved back down to Mississippi. It's kind of strange that at both times that both have changed positions this season, they were basically swapped for each other. The same thing happened whenever Bryce Elder was moved up to Mississippi is when Nolan Kingham was moved up to Gwinnett. So kind of a strange set of circumstances throughout the season.
Yeah, as it was pointed out, I think, by Chris Harris, I think Kingham and Elder actually have the same number right now. They have not – I don't think they've been on the same team, have they?
No. In fact, Harris, I believe he also put out a stat of how the number 58 has done for Mississippi this season. Not the player, just the number, the uniform number 58. And it was really, really good stats.
Yeah. So we talked last week about how Kingham was being challenged at AAA and how his stuff doesn't really – done him any favors in AAA. So hopefully he takes that as a learning experience, goes back to AA, tightens some things up, and is able to bounce back to AAA before the end of the season. But really the reason Kingham went up to AAA is they need guys that to pitch innings, right? They just have too many guys that are getting these short starts. And even with the really big bullpens now, it's got to be starting to wear out some of these guys.
Yeah, and if you want a guy to eat some innings, Bryce Elder's been your guy this season. I mean, most of his starts are going six, seven innings. I mean, you're not seeing any cases where he's getting knocked out in the first inning or the second inning. He's going well into games. And, I mean, this five-inning stint he had for his initial AAA start was one of his shorter starts of the season. But for the Gwinnett rotation these days, five innings is a godsend.
And then we had some guys actually come up today. This was announced this afternoon. William Woods, Drew Campbell, and Jake Higginbotham. All three of those guys have been hurt for a good chunk of the year. All those guys will now find themselves in High A Rome to get themselves hopefully back on track here.
Yeah, it's good to see that some of these injured guys are starting to make their way back. So it's not, I mean, I can't imagine they're going to get a lot of progress this season, especially in the case of someone like William Woods, who had a lot of helium coming into the season. But he'll get a few weeks to kind of get his feet under him, or his arm under him, if you want to put it that way, so he can get some innings in. And I can imagine that he might be on track to possibly go to the Arizona Fall League with as little he's going to be pitching this season.
Yeah, that's a good call. I could see that for Higginbotham, too. And the other guy moving on up, Adam Zabrowski, the offensive lineman. I'm sorry, the catcher. I'm going to keep making that joke, Matt. I'm sorry.
Just keep on keeping on.
He's moving up from the FCL to the Augusta Green Jackets. Now, for all these moves, we don't know what the corresponding moves are yet, and I suspect we won't know until tomorrow. But obviously, suddenly three people coming up to Rome and another catcher showing up in Augusta means there's probably some guys that are probably on the move the other way, possibly some IL stints or developmental list stints. But we'll have to see about it.
Yeah, I imagine that developmental list for several different Braves minor league teams is going to be getting quite a workout here towards the end of the season.
Yeah. Now, we talked about last week about how much fun that week was. All the teams doing well, a lot of the top prospects really performing well. This week wasn't nearly as much fun as three key performers at three different levels go on the injured list. It looks like the most serious is probably Logan Brown, the Rome starting catcher. He was placed on the 60-day IL. Now, because they're minor leaguers, they don't necessarily announce what happens to him, so you have to kind of try to go figure it out for yourself. I went back and looked at the game in which he was removed, and it looks like a foul tip might have hit him on the hand or the arm. So being put on the 60-day IL, I'm assuming this is a real 60-day IL and it's not a Riley Delgado 60-day IL that mysteriously, you know, he wasn't having to actually be on the 60 days for. If it is in fact real, then that's probably the end of the season for him.
Yeah, with only what, about roughly 4 or 5 weeks left in the season, anything significant will be probably the end for him for the season. So yeah, they're having to shift a lot of bodies around right now to help make up some of the difference in some of these transactions.
And then unfortunately, Victor Vodnik is back on the IL. This is only a 7-day stint. I have no idea what he's on there for, because the last time out against Biloxi, he looked fantastic. 5 no-hit innings. So I don't know if you've heard anything about what's ailing Mr. Vodnik.
No, and I mean, who knows how serious or not serious it might be, but I mean, he was literally in the middle of a no-hitter after 5 innings worth. So hopefully it's nothing serious and we can get at least a little more visibility to what Vodnik is doing here for the end of the season, because it's not a lost season by any means, but it's a lot of stops and starts, and it's kind of hard to build any kind of momentum if he's doing that.
Yeah. And then finally, Jaceel De La Cruz went on the 7-day IL. Again, I went back and looked and see what was going on. It's a start where he only faced 4 batters. 3 of them actually came around and scored, did not get anybody out. It looks like Mike Maroth went out to just talk to him. And during the course of that conversation, and also William Contreras and a couple of the infielders were in that conversation as well, and they all seemed to be emphatic that there was something wrong. And De La Cruz was trying to say there wasn't anything wrong. Maroth called for the trainer. He came out, and very quickly after that, De La Cruz left the mound. So don't know exactly what was going on there, but it was at least enough to get him on the IL. De La Cruz just really having an unfortunate season. We talked about how they kind of danced around maybe making him a reliever and then reinserting him in the rotation, but he's just hasn't really been able to build his pitch count up yet. So I'm not sure what's going to happen now with De La Cruz. If it's a short stint, I'm guessing he'll be back in the rotation again, but it's a difficult situation.
Yeah, if it goes more than, I would say, maybe a couple of weeks, if he is able to come back this season, I could see him just going to the bullpen just to get a little bit of work in here, give him a few appearances before the end of the season, because by then it'll be too late to really build back up to much of anything. And you're starting to be able to get some bodies in the rotation to where you don't necessarily have to put him in there. So I feel like that might be the route they go with him. They just give him a couple 1-2 inning appearances here and there. I would think they would want to try, if he's healthy, to end the season on some kind of a positive note. That might be the best way to do it.
All right, shall we start talking about the affiliates?
Let's do that. Starting up at the top at Gwinnett, had a very good week. They went to Louisville to take on the Louisville Bats and old friend Ender Inciarte, and they took 5 out of 6. They won the first 5 games of the week and dropped the Sunday finale. So they're still about 6.5 games back of first place, so they're no threat to challenge at the top of the Durham at the top of the division, but a very successful week, and the starting rotation had a lot to do with that. Like we'd mentioned, it's just been a lot of stopgap and fillers and openers like Connor Johnstone and Tanner Roark over the last few weeks, but they brought out some heavy lumber this week. We spoke about Bryce Elder's start. Ian Anderson made a rehab start, went very nicely, pitched 4 1/3 innings, didn't give up any runs, only walked 1 and struck out 6 in that time, and he got up to 76 pitches. So imagine they'll probably give him 1 more rehab start. If I had to guess, they'll probably start him on Tuesday, which would line him up to start possibly Sunday in Atlanta against the Giants. So if that's just kind of keep an eye on, they haven't announced a starter at Gwinnett for Tuesday yet, but if they do and he starts in, that's kind of what you can expect to see going there.
Hi, future Andy here. Shortly after the conclusion of us recording, it was announced that Ian Anderson will make the start Tuesday. That would be today now for Gwinnett. So back to you, Matt.
Jose Rodriguez, ever since he got moved down to Mississippi and moved back up again to Gwinnett, he's done really well for himself. Not one of his most successful starts, but he did manage to go 6 innings and give up 4 runs. And that's had several good starts he's had in a row there. And a couple of guys that really did very well. Kyle Wright, our pitcher of the week for OFR, he pitched 7 innings, gave up just 1 run. Also had a stand-up triple, which, musingly enough, was hit over Ender Inciarte and couldn't even throw him out as Wright pulled into third on the triple standing up. So that was a pretty funny aspect of that game there. And also, Kyle Muller, after moved down from Atlanta, and I think he could understand why he was moved down. Then it sounded like he responded positively to it. He's like, hey, I still got some things to work on. Get my command in order before I come back up again. And he did pretty well in that regard. He gave up just one unearned run over six innings, just gave up one hit. He did walk three, but that's not completely out of the realm of possibility for Muller to succeed in doing that, if you're on, especially if you're going to give up one hit. And he went up to 89 pitches over those six innings, which for him is fairly efficient. But as far as the starters go. But we had some really good bullpen work as well. Sean Newcomb's done really well ever since he got moved down from Atlanta. He had a couple of scoreless, hitless appearances over the week, and he's striking out a lot of hitters. I don't think it's going to be enough to get him back into Atlanta anytime this season, especially with the way the bullpen's working out these days, and you got several relievers doing really fine work, especially from the left side, that he's probably going to be the odd man looking in here for the rest of the season. Dylan Lee also had a couple more scoreless perfect appearances, and he's got an ERA of around 1.5 this season with a whip of 0.74, so really good work for him, although it's much like Newcomb, he's probably not going to be enough to get him in anytime season, but it's really helping out this Gwinnett staff and backing up these starters.
Yeah, we had a conversation on Twitter earlier today about how some of these veteran players with really kind of stellar numbers at AAA, and it might be a little bit of a mirage. I'm not trying to kind of downplay what anybody's doing here. I mean, it's great they're being successful, but unless you're really doing something different, you're trying something new, you got a new pitch or you changed up a mechanics or something like that, I don't know if just simply putting up a low ERA at AAA is going to matter that much. It's been documented that the gap in the play between major leagues and AAA is probably as big as it's been maybe in our lifetimes, Matt. And a lot of that has to do with the number of injuries that have gone on in the major league level coming off of that weird short season last year. And it's really kind of taken the cream of the AAA rosters and moved them all up. We all know that, in a perfect world, Abraham Almonte and Guillermo Heredia and William Contreras, all those guys would have been in AAA all season, right? So just about every team is like that. So, we were talking specifically when we were talking about Jesse Biddle, who is, having a great season for Gwinnett, but probably isn't a candidate to come back to Atlanta, at least not this season.
And I don't think anyone is clamoring to see him, because we've seen that show lots of times, and we've even seen the reruns, and no desire to see it again. But the one guy that does seem to have really helped was A.J. Minter when he got sent down, but it was more that he didn't need to change anything as far as his stuff or learn a new pitch or anything like that. He just needed to get a few good outings in, get some confidence so he can come back up, and he just had a pretty dominant outing here versus the Yankees. So it's whatever he did down there for those couple of weeks really seemed to have helped him get his confidence back, and he's done very well since he's returned.
Yeah, he's looked great. And I think it's different. AJ Minter's stuff is just so much better than all these other guys, right? It's just a matter of, is he in the right headspace to be successful? And we've seen him be successful at the major league level. So I think that's a little bit different. I think Newcomb's a little bit different than that, because there's some mechanical things about Newcomb. I think he tips his pitches. I've thought that for a while now. I think the way he throws the curveball and the way he throws the fastball are so different that I think good hitters can adjust to that. And that's why he gets hit harder when he gets up to the major leagues. But anyway, enough of that.
Let me go with the position players here. But there's a few guys that had really good hits. Travis DeMeritt had a four-hit game, hit a home run this week. Jonathan Morales had a really good game with the promotion of William Contreras to Atlanta. That all of a sudden thrust Jonathan Morales into the role of starting catcher at Gwinnett, which is not something I thought we would be seeing this season. But sometimes, like you said, you get enough injuries, and that's the kind of stuff you find. But he had a four-hit game with a home run on one night last week, and that was his first four-hit game since 2016 at Rome. So nice work for Jonathan Morales in that. And it's even gotten to the point where he's the starting catcher, and Ryan Castile even caught a game the last week. So, yeah, with the injuries and trades, yeah, they're kind of scrambling right there, but they're making do. Eddie Rosario, who's still rehabbing down there at Gwinnett, but he had a really, really strange week. He was just 5 out of 22 this week, but he had 2 doubles and 2 home runs, and he drove – now, he only had he had 5 hits for the week and somehow drove in 11 runs. So, talking about making the most of your opportunities. So, yeah, it was a really strange week there. But and neither one of the outfielders, Christian Pache or Drew Waters, had good weeks. It just seems like there's a little bit of a lull there. Christian Pache only played in 4 games last week, but he had 2 3 strikeout games. Drew Waters didn't have any extra base hits for the week, and I believe he was around 2 for 17 with a handful of strikeouts, and he had a few walks, so he had helped his on-base percentage a little bit, but didn't really contribute much else otherwise. But overall, it was a really good week for Gwinnett. They only made up a game in the standings, even though they won 5 out of 6, but they had a really good week.
Yeah. Yeah. I still like Pache, kind of what he's doing right now. I know the results weren't there this week, but I really still like his swing. I think he's in a good place. Drew Waters seems kind of weirdly passive at the plate right now, which is not something I'd ever thought I'd say about Drew Waters. I'd maybe like to see a little bit of the old aggressiveness back. He seems like he's looking at a lot of pitches right now.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. But yeah, like you talk about Christian Pache, I'm really liking the approach as well. And the best thing for him, and I don't think anybody's calling for it, and I don't see any chance of it happening at this point. He just needs to stay in Gwinnett for the rest of the season and let it ride, and just keep working on that approach, and hopefully he can come back and contribute in Atlanta at some point next season.
Well, I think Guillermo Heredia would slice him in half with his swords if he came up to Atlanta, so we don't want that.
Oh, no. All right, let's talk about some Mississippi Braves. The Mississippi Braves are the team that's most likely of any of the affiliates to make the playoffs this season, and they had a really good week. They went into Montgomery. They were up 2.5 games in the standings on Montgomery, and with not a whole lot of games left in the season, they wanted to really help extend the lead in the division, and they did just that. They went from 2.5 games up for the week, entering the week, to 6.5 games at the end of the week as they took 5 out of 6 from the Montgomery Biscuits. So that leaves their record now at 58-38, with a 6.5 game lead with only 24 games left. So we're starting to talk about magic numbers now. I believe it's down to around 20 or so. So hopefully over the next couple of weeks, we can start talking about some possible division titles coming soon. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that, whether they want to bring in some help from Rome, which I don't know if they'll do that at this point unless it's to backfill because of injuries. But I think they really like the team they've got here, and Dan Meyer's just doing an absolutely tremendous job as the interim manager / pitching coach. And, I mean, things are going really well. And the starting rotation, it was a really kind of a strange week. Nolan Kingham was one of the highlights of the week when he came down from Gwinnett. Obviously, we spoke about how badly things went in Gwinnett when he has an ERA of over 10, but he came in and immediately contributed. And it was a doubleheader game, so it was only a 7-inning game, and he gave up 1 run over 7 innings. But the interesting part about that is the run, he gave it up in the 7th inning, which extended his scoreless streak to 33 innings right before that, which is a new Mississippi Braves record. So congratulations to Mr. Kingham on that one. That game ended up being tied going into the 8th inning, and the Braves took it off in the 8th inning and took that game. Now, as far as other starters this week, Freddie Tarnock had another nice game. He pitched 5 innings, ended up taking the loss because he gave up a couple unearned runs due to a couple errors from Braden Shumate, but still another nice start there. Spencer Strider had a pretty fair start. He gave up 3 runs over 5 2/3 innings, struck out 6 and walked 1, so another nice start for him. And Alan Rangel had 1 good start where he gave up 3 runs over 6 innings, and then he had another strange start. He pitched one of the doubleheader games on Sunday and pitched 2 scoreless innings, and they pulled him. I guess it's more of a bullpen game, so it was interesting to see that. So I'm kind of wondering if they're going to try to start managing his innings here for the duration of the campaign.
Yeah, it's again, we talked about how they've kind of pulled some guys into the bullpen after being successful as starters. It was like Odavi Javier and Hayden Deal. Rangel may be up for that as well. Maybe if they see that at the next level, he's a reliever, you know, and that's what I suspect is going on with Deal and with Javier.
And in our weekly Indigo Diaz update, two more scoreless appearances. although he was on a bit of a downslide this week. He actually gave up a hit in one of the appearances, and in the other appearance, he actually walked two, but didn't give up any runs, and he's up to 13 innings in his Mississippi career and still has not given up a single run. So things are still going very well for him, and to the point where I'm hearing some there's a lot of chatter online. It's like, hey, why don't we look at him in Atlanta? But I don't think we're at that point.
No, there's a huge difference between doing it at Double A and doing it in Atlanta. Love his stuff. I certainly love his mentality, but you know, at least let's see what he looks like at Triple A first.
Yeah. Now, as far as the hitters go this week, there were several significant contributors. Justin Dean had a fairly nice week. He had a 3-hit game, went 6-for-19, had a triple and 3 stolen bases. Drew Lugbauer had another one of his interesting weeks where he was just 4-for-17, but had 2 home runs and a double, despite the fact he had 4 multi-strikeout games. Another fun week for him. Shea Langeliers was 5-for-18, had another extra base hit and a double. Didn't hit any home runs, but can't expect that every single week from him. Now, one guy that's really kind of picked up the pace here recently, he's just had an awful season overall, is C.J. Alexander. Even now his batting average is still under 200 for the season, but he's had a couple of good weeks here in a row. He went 5-for-15 this week with 3 doubles and 4 stolen bases. And I didn't realize until I did some digging into it, he's actually second on the team to Justin Dean in stolen bases, and he's stolen 13 bases in 14 attempts this season. So hopefully he can keep this going for a few more weeks and end his season on a positive note.
Yeah, it's interesting. When he was drafted and, you know, hit all those home runs, you know, at the lower levels in his first season as a pro, a lot of people looked at him. He's kind of a tall guy and figured, okay, he's as he grows up, he's going to, you know, kind of fill out a little bit. He really hasn't. He's kind of, he's a solidly built young man, but he's still pretty tall and thin, and he moves pretty good around the bases. So it's interesting that sometimes when you hear that, oh, he'll fill out, yeah, sometimes that doesn't necessarily happen.
No, and he's kind of the same situation Braden Shoemake was a couple months ago, although Shoemake's down period was a lot shorter than Alexander's, but C.J. Alexander's is his OPS is actually threatening. He's kind of hovering right around the 600 mark, and I mean, he's been in the low 500s for months on end now. So if he could get past that and get his batting average above 200, it'd be a nice way for him to end his season.
Yeah, I really hope Mississippi does well. I hope they make the playoffs and have a good run. They're such a fun team this year to watch. Just a bunch of good guys too. You kind of pull for them, and it kind of comes across to the crowd, I think, too.
Yeah, and it's helped. I think what really helped them was the minor league Rule 5 draft, where they got guys like Wendell Rijo and Jalen Miller, mm-hmm. and Jacob Pearson, getting guys to these are not guys that are going to be high-end prospects, but they definitely fill in positions of need on the field, and they've all contributed in various ways this season, especially Wendell Rijo, who's had a really good season, where they haven't had to use a bunch of org guys to kind of just slap into a position to hope for the best. So I think that's really one thing that's really helped out this season.
So you're saying he may be better than Luis Valenzuela?
Slightly. Maybe even better than Alejandro Salazar. Maybe.
Well, hold on there. All right, let's move on to Rome. We won't talk too much about Rome. They dropped 4-of-6 against Greenville. I did go out to see one of the games on Saturday. So that was pretty fun. That was one of their wins, and I got to see Jared Schuster live for the first time, and he did not disappoint. I assume it was for me, since I was in the stands, but he had his longest outing of the season so far, 6 innings pitched, and he looked really good. He had one inning where he kind of lost his command and kind of struggled, but the other 5 innings, he was calm, cool, and collected. Runs a really nice low to mid 90s fastball if he would just threw that, I think he would have been fine. But he also mixed in the changeup, which was really sharp, and then the curveball, which was okay. But I have to say I was really pleased with my first look at Mr. Schuster. The rest of the starting rotation actually did pretty well this week. Tanner Gordon came back up and only gave up one run in six innings. And then Darius Vines with a quality start. Coleman Huntley and Jake McSteen pitched pretty solidly. Were kind of victimized by poor defense behind them. The bullpen did really well too, including recent promotee Benjamin Dumb. I think we mentioned him last week. I'm not sure if we didn't. Sorry if we didn't. But he moved on up and had a really nice outing. Actually, two outings, pitched 3 2/3, scoreless. But all that great pitching, they still dropped 2 of 4, 2 of 6. So what happened? The answer was they just didn't score a whole bunch of runs. That wasn't really the fault of Michael Harris or Jesse Franklin. They were both on base at a 400 clip or better. But they didn't knock themselves in this week. So no home runs means that you have to rely on the other guys in the lineup, and they just weren't up to the task. Really, the only other guy in the lineup regularly that was doing well was Cody Milligan, the leadoff hitter. He was 5 for 17. I did see him make another error, and I really think that he's like Austin Riley, where he sometimes makes fantastic plays, but the slow ones where he has a lot of time to think about it, something bad can happen. And, you know, Riley certainly has gotten better with that as the years progressed and the season progressed. And we'll see if Milligan can overcome this as well. The rest of the lineup just, pretty pedestrian, unfortunately. So we'll see if they're able to get it together next week. Moving on to Augusta. After sweeping Kannapolis at home last week, they were swept by Carolina away. So Carolina is a really good team. They're leading the Central Division of the Low A East League. Is that what they're called? Okay.
That is.
All right. The league that's not the South Atlantic League for some reason. They got swept under the rug by the Mudcats. So it doesn't get any easier for them. They have to come home and face the River Dogs, who have routinely beat up the Jackets this season.
I think they should simply take on Kannapolis every week.
Yes, it would be nice. There was a, I don't know if you saw this, but Augusta tweeted before the series, Augusta Green Jackets best team in minor leagues over the last 7 days. And then the Mudcast responded after the series, so how about now?
Those Low East teams are getting a little feisty with each other this season.
Yeah, well, Augusta said, hey, at least we still haven't lost to Kannapolis. How about you?
Poor Kannapolis getting caught in the crossfire, catching a couple of strays.
Oh, man. This was kind of the reverse of Rome, where Rome had pretty good pitching and no offense. It was in Augusta, the bats were actually pretty alive. Two recent additions, Cal Conley and Justin Henry Malloy, they've done a really nice job kind of getting up here and settling in, and this was their best week, both of them. Like a very kind of mirror image weeks. They both hit a home run. That was Justin Henry Malloy's first professional home run, so congratulations to him, both with stolen base. Outfielder Willie Carter was our OFR position player of the week. He only played in 4 games. His playing time's getting curtailed a little bit as they get more guys in the lineup. But in those 4 games, he hit .538 with a couple doubles and stole 5 bases, which is funny because I don't think of him as kind of a fast guy. But obviously, maybe the Mudcats have a problem catcher or something, because it seems like a lot of Green Jackets were stealing bases this week. For example, Vaughn Grissom, he had another big week. He stole 3 bases himself to go with 2 doubles. And since coming off the injury list on July 14th, he has hit only .370, .465 on base, .564 slugging, Matt.
Yeah, and I think, I believe it was Landon Stevens also that he had 3 stolen bases in 1 game, and coming into the game, he'd only been like 3 out of 7 this season, and then he just steals 3 bases. It's so random, especially with the pitching and the rubber rules and all that in the low A East, that you just got some folks just absolutely going off on their stolen bases this season.
Yeah, so that makes me wonder if the Mudcats were literally using a one-armed catcher.
Very possible.
The bullpen was very bad. The one exception is a guy that moved up earlier in the week, Dylan Spain. He was the 10th round pick from this latest draft. Had a really nice week. He has yet to allow an earned run as a professional. So a great start to his career. And then the other guy I want to talk about, Matt, Dylan Dodd, made his pro debut. He was, I believe, a 3rd round pick. Was it 3rd round?
I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the 3rd round pick, and I watched his start a little bit. Pretty good changeup. That was kind of his best pitch. And, you know, at that level, you can throw pretty much a straight change down the middle, and it'll handle most low A batters. So that was pretty effective. The fastball, low 90s, not a lot of life to it, and that was pretty much what was getting squared up. He did allow a couple of runs, but I think at least at the lower levels, Dylan Dodd's not going to have too much of a trouble.
Nah, figure it's going to be okay. It's kind of like Nolan Kingham. If you don't miss bats like that, then you'll be fine for a couple of levels, but then once you get to double A and higher, that's when it's really going to come into play. You got to have your stuff together.
Well, speaking of missing bats, Ryan Cusick still doing that. Struck out 4 in 2 innings of work in his start. So he did give up 1 run. So the hope that he's never giving up a run in his professional career, that's over now. So sorry, Ryan Cusick fans, but he's still looking very strong, and I still think he gets maybe 2 or 3 more starts before moving to Rome.
Yeah, I think it might get at least a taste of Rome here before the end of the season.
Yep. All right, and then the FCL, they had a pretty good week going 4-1, although today in action, they lost both ends of a doubleheader. They got a lot of good pitching last week, especially from Jorge Bautista. He'd been having kind of a rough go of it coming over from the DSL from 2019. Still only 20 years old, but he had a really nice job going in 5 innings, only allowed 2 hits, no runs. Jared Johnson went down a level and did some nice things, had a scoreless 4 innings there. And then some rehabbing guys, Jake Higginbotham and William Woods, also looking pretty good, at least stat-wise. But, of course, we can't see what they actually look like because those aren't on TV anywhere.
Now, and I think also A.J. Smith-Shawver had his first appearance the other day and pitched a couple of innings, getting yet another of the 2021 draftees into action.
Yeah, that was actually today. So I think now the only draftees that haven't made their debuts yet are the number 11 pick, Adam Shoemaker.
Right.
And then, of course, Spencer Schwellenbach, who's, of course, just had Tommy John surgery. So we will wait on him next year. Also, congratulations to catcher Liam McGill. He got his first game action and hit his first professional home run last week. Well, Matt, I think that's going to wrap it up unless you got something else.
No, pretty solid efforts throughout the minors this week. More success in the upper levels than the lower, but we always try again next week, and hopefully we'll have a better week all the way around.
Yep. All right. Everybody, have a great week.
Have a good one.
Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal. Tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Rien, c'est c'est payé, balayé, oublié. Je me fous du passé avec mes souvenirs. J'ai allumé le feu, mes chagrins, mes plaisirs. Je n'ai plus besoin d'eux. Balayer les amours avec leur trémolo, balayer pour toujours, je repars à zéro. Non, je ne regrette rien, ni le bien. Ma vie